from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Empty storefronts have become a common feature of major cities across the country, and the Bay Area is no exception. Although the economy is humming along, retail can't seem to catch a break. Yesterday, San Francisco Mayor London Breed announced a plan to streamline regulations and allow more pop-ups in hopes of filling vacant stores. But some wonder if that's enough to bring business back. This morning on Forum, we take a closer look at her plan and other possible causes behind the increasing number of empty storefronts, including high rents and online shopping. And we'll look at the future of brick-and-mortar retail. And we want to hear from you. What's going on in your neighborhood shopping district? That's all next, after this. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. By most accounts, the Bay Area economy is booming. Yet to even the casual observer, empty storefronts have a strong presence on local streets, even in desirable neighborhoods. Among the causes, experts say, is the rise in online shopping and landlords holding out for tenants who will pay higher rents. In San Francisco, critics often point to the cost and hassle of doing business. And yesterday, Mayor London Breed announced a plan Monday to streamline regulations in the hopes of filling vacant stores. In this hour, we're going to look at the state of retail in the Bay Area and what can be done to keep our neighborhoods thriving. And we want to hear from you. Are empty storefronts a problem in your city or neighborhood? And we'd especially like to hear from small business owners about opening or maintaining a brick-and-mortar store in the Bay Area. You can call us now at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. The number again, 866-733-6786, or email forum@kqed.org. Let me tell you who is joining us for the hour. Roland Lee is here in studio. He's a business reporter with the San Francisco Chronicle. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Joaquin Torres, who's also with us this morning, Director of the Office of Economic and Workforce Development with the City and County of San Francisco. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you for having us.
Glad to have you, and also glad to have Julie Taylor, who's here with us in studio, who is a retail real estate broker and Executive Vice President of Colliers International. They're a global real estate service and services and investment management company. Thank you
for
being with us.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning to you. Let's begin, Roland, if I may, with you, and let's just get the general picture of what we're talking about here. There are a lot of retail vacancies. Some people say it looks like a blight out there, depending on what neighborhood you're in. But here's this booming San Francisco economy, and most people feel, what are we doing with empty storefronts? What are we doing with all these vacant buildings? Explain to us.
Right. So actually, the city commissioned a report earlier this year, and it did say that the city has been more insulated against these retail challenges like online shopping and big department stores closing. But there has been a slowdown, and I think it's a combination of high rents, the high cost of operations, including hiring people who are already paying very high costs for housing, and then also this permitting problem where it takes months or even years to get a single storefront open and can be hundreds of thousands of dollars before you even open it.
We don't even know the numbers on this, though, do we? I mean, there's this figure 3.2% vacancy, which is lower than most in the nation. And West Portal has kind of the best record on vacancies, Visitation Valley the worst. But we're finding a lot of challenges here just getting the number of how many places are actually vacant.
Yeah, it is very hard to track every single neighborhood. You've seen some neighborhood groups actually do their own studies. So, for example, North Beach found that the vacancy rate actually went from 5% 3 years ago to 10% this year. So a pretty big change. But it is definitely a challenge to get that data.
So what are we going to do about this, Joaquin Torres? There's a plan in the works?
Yeah, absolutely. So yesterday, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, Mayor London Breed, together with Supervisor Valley Brown, introduced the first of policy proposals to help address some of these issues. As Roland was talking about in terms of the need to cut down on time, and for small businesses, as we all know, time equals money. Cutting down times for them to go through the process, saving them a month to 3 months, as we all know, with high rents or just the rent cost in San Francisco, saving that time is essential for them. Also, we're talking about a very creative industry. San Francisco is a city of neighborhoods. And those neighborhoods are special. Why? Because of the small businesses that inhabit them. They really want to be up and running as quickly as possible, but they also want to be successful once they're there. This policy proposal coming forward that's being introduced today really does allow that flexibility, aligning health codes, planning codes, local and state, offering opportunities for live entertainment that otherwise will not happen, so that we can be creative about the activation that all of us want to see in our storefronts and our neighborhoods.
So planning and permits represent in many people's minds too much red tape, but we're seeing a lot of the bigger chains, for example, not doing that well either in terms of the number of people, pedestrians are doing foot traffic in their stores.
Well, I think what we're looking at is a streamlining of processes both externally for the experience of the business owner, as well as the alignment of city services to make sure that we can create that environment for them. It's all about something that will be warm, welcoming, expeditious, so that small businesses can do what they do best.
Broadening what's going to be allowed on the ground floor, is that part of it?
Yeah, certainly what's allowed is something that will be upcoming. The ones that we're focusing on today were mostly around reducing duplications, aligning state and local codes. So let's say you're a dry cleaner and you really want to go ahead and serve some coffee so you can diversify your revenue stream. Certainly it's something that is not as easy to do today given the requirements for bathrooms for those uses. This legislation addresses that.
This is really all about regulations, though? I mean, what about the high rents? They're, you know, going astronomical.
Well, I think it's a combination of factors that have to be looked at comprehensively. That's why you have to have an approach that focuses not only on policy proposals, investments to help solidify deals, which is what this initiative does, and then also the administrative reforms as well necessary to get people up and running quickly. Those investments can make a big deal. Just last night, we were out in Chinatown at Lipo Cocktail Lounge celebrating the brightening of their neon sign. For some places, in terms of solidifying a deal, they really need some additional capital sometimes to close the gap for tenant improvements they may need, and this program does that.
And Julie Taylor, let me bring you into this. Julie Taylor, again, is retail real estate broker and executive vice president at Colliers International. This isn't all about greedy landlords?
Not at all. And actually, rental rates have softened across the city, and there are actually very few landlords sort of holding out for that last dollar at this point. And it's really more about a shift in consumer patterns, as well as a real change in the nature of our streets. You know, what is our neighborhood and our downtown shopping environment? Is it pleasant? Our small businesses and our chain stores alike are fighting an onslaught of not just red tape, but crime. And deterioration in just quality of life.
Let me talk to you about that. I mean, how much has to do with the neighborhoods themselves and neighborhoods having problems with respect to homeless and with respect to the streets needing to be cleaned up of needles and feces and all the rest of that and people finding places to park? I mean, how does that figure into the whole picture, the things that we keep hearing about that are blighting also the city?
It's incredibly difficult for a retailer to be putting their best foot forward when the consumer has had a negative experience walking to their shop.
Because they're dependent on that foot traffic.
Absolutely. I'm a board member of the Union Square BID. I'm very active in the Streetscape Committee and the Executive Committee, and the BID is doing everything they can to pick up after, yet another night in San Francisco. You know, the tons of trash and the needles that they pick up is really astonishing. And a lot of the neighborhoods do not have resources as extensive. But really, I believe that the city has left all of the merchants across the city and downtown high and dry when it comes to keeping the streets clean and keeping things safe. San Francisco is the number one city for property crime in the United States, and I know personally of retailers who've had their windows smashed and, you know, snatch and grab, and there's no arrest and there's no judicial inclination to lock people up.
Julie, let me read you a quote. It's from the New York Daily News. New York has this problem. This problem is, as I said to Roland Lee at the beginning of the story, nationwide in big metropolitan areas. This is the quote, and I'd like your response. These big real estate companies hold out for higher rents to increase the worth of their properties because value is based on future income stream. This is Peter Metz of Manhattan CPA. Quote, they can afford to forego current rental income waiting for higher paying tenants because they claim big business losses. Landlords get a tax loss from negative rental income when no rent comes in, which cushions their lack of cash flow. So that's happening in San Francisco?
To a much smaller degree than in New York. I just came back from a week in New York attending a retail conference, and New York's vacancy is far greater than that in San Francisco, and they have far more institutional ownership who, yes, are driven by holding out for that extra rent, you know, however long it takes. But San Francisco is very different in that the majority of our property owners are still families, you know, second, third generation families who own real estate in our neighborhoods and in Union Square.
So, and a lot of the mom and pop stores being replaced, though, being replaced by bigger companies?
Yes, but retail is constant. Yes and no, I'm going to say, Michael. Retail is constantly changing. Retail changes when consumer tastes change. They change when a district falls in favor or out of favor. So retail is always evolving, and I would suggest there'd probably been more chain store collapse than mom-pop retailers in the last few years.
I know you hear a lot about landlords being greedy. Here's a caller who wants to take that position or opine that. Courtney, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I'm a residential real estate agent in San Francisco. I'm not an expert on commercial or on rentals. But I've lived in the city since the 80s, and I totally disagree that it's not greedy landlords. I think that everybody who can is getting top dollar in every way. And even though rents may have softened a tiny bit, when you look at the whole, like, the last 5-10 years, how much rents have been raised commercially and residentially, it's, you know, that statement just doesn't make any sense to me. It's a grab. It's definitely a money grab. And I know that the homeless problem is big, and I know that we need businesses to thrive, but I just had the call when I heard her say that.
All right. Thank you for that call. You want to respond to that, Julie Taylor?
I would love to walk you down any neighborhood street and share with you the stories of the different property owners. I don't want to stereotype all landlords as greedy because I work with plenty of them who
You would concede there's some avarice out there, though, wouldn't you?
I would agree there is some, but I would also tell you there are a lot of people whose, you know, families depend on cash flow from these properties, and they really want to find the right fit for the building, someone who's going to survive and thrive for the long term, because it's enormously expensive for a landlord to put in a retailer at a rent that they cannot afford, and they just collapse a few years later. Then all of the improvements have to be demolished, and the attorneys and the brokers all have to be paid over again. So there are exceptions on, you know, on both ends.
Let me bring in Dion Garcia, who is a co-owner of Streamline Cafe and Art Gallery in the Parkside neighborhood of San Francisco. And good to have you with us, Dion Garcia. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Glad to have you. You want to weigh in on this debate if you would lend some wisdom to it? I mean, we're talking about retail being a problem because there are too many vacant buildings, and they have to do with perhaps greed, among other things?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's greed or what exactly are the root causes behind vacancies, whether it's, you know, real commercial vacancies throughout a lot of different cities. But I know that our experience was a very, very frustrating and confusing and expensive experience. I mean, just the fact that it takes you many times, if you need to do a CUA, a change of use authorization, it could take you 6+ months to get in front of the planning commission. And in those 6+ months, you're, you know, you still have the bills to pay. You still have to pay the rent. You still have to pay for just the utilities, and you're not, you know, incurring or having any business to bring in income. So, and that's something that, you know, because of conflicting information that and confusion that we received from city agencies, we weren't fully prepared for. So it's extraordinarily difficult. And it's also scary, confusing, mm-hmm. and you know, you often feel like you're walking on eggshells because you want to do the right thing, but you don't know exactly, you know, what you're supposed to be doing.
Well, what would you like, for example, in terms of the city to do, or for that matter, governmental agencies to do that could help you increase more foot traffic with respect to your business?
Well, I mean, in terms of foot traffic, I mean, that's another aspect. I mean,
well, it has something to do with some of the vacancies, certainly, doesn't it? If there's not enough foot traffic.
It does. And I think that what we've seen recently, for example, is along Caravelle Street, the SFMTA has had to make the decision to eliminate many parking spaces to so that people don't get hit by cars getting off of the El Caravelle train. But the impact is that there's nowhere to park. There's not as much walking traffic around some of these businesses, and they're turning into vacant storefronts, such as a business called Hunter's Threads on Caravelle. Yeah. What I'd love to see happen with the city, though, is when we went through this process, I naively thought that, you know, we would be shepherded through the process by the various agencies that we have to deal with in order to make sure that everything is up to code and we're in compliance. But what happens is that there's a lot of times a hands off, like, you're going to have to talk to that agency. And then when you go to that other agency, then they're going to give you conflicting information. And then you're caught in the middle when you don't know anything about, you know, the specifics of codes, you know, just the generalization of codes, then you're lost, and it's a scary place to be.
Yeah, no, I thank you for that, and thank you for joining us. That's Dion Garcia, again, is co-owner of Streamline Cafe and Art Gallery, and he's talking about Taravelle, and you can see the difference on Taravelle Street just by the kind of way it's divided, binary. There's a lot in one part that's going on in terms of shopping, and foot traffic really plays more of a role in some ways, a majority role. Isn't that right, Roland Lee, as opposed to car traffic?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, you're seeing kind of a variance where, and I think for some of these outer neighborhoods, the real challenge is that there are no office workers during the day compared to downtown, and so you're relying a lot more on tourists who, you know, are hopefully in the area, or more evening traffic, and I think that's kind of why the city is focusing more on outer neighborhoods, right?
Let me go back to you, Joaquin. Yeah. I mean, how do you respond to that call with Dion Garcia?
Well, first I want to go back to a bit about the perception issue in terms of what our neighborhoods need. I mean, in some of the outer neighborhoods in particular, and people feeling comfortable about what is or is not in fad or what's easy to get to, we try to highlight through our marketing programs, our buy local campaigns, the exceptional quality of those neighborhoods, those commercial districts, the unique experience that they provide. Our marketing programs, our shop and dine campaigns are ones that help highlight and lift up those neighborhoods and particular businesses, because we know that anchor institutions are very important in terms of drawing people and creating that foot traffic, in addition to gathering spaces. Well, you can't have a gathering space to address another item that came up around public safety and cleaning issues unless you're laser focused on those on the ground street level issues. Whether you talk about the items that you mentioned before that are causing so much of us concern on the ground, it takes a comprehensive approach, departments getting together, working together, talking together every single day, in the morning, through the day, at night, to address those issues. And that's something that Mayor Breed is particularly focused on during her time right now, in addition to also making sure that when it comes to process and permitting issues, when you have all these departments that we've heard the story before about people not talking to each other, that's why we created a position in our department to help people do just that, to guide someone if they were in the food and beverage industry as a start, to help guide them through that process and make sure that those departments were adjusting themselves, having common sense answers, not relying on bureaucratic language to confuse people, but finding ways to get them through the process. Again, it's something that the legislation is looking to address.
Again, Joaquin Torres directs the Office of Economic and Workforce Development in the City and County of San Francisco. Let me bring another caller on, and a caller from San Jose. James, welcome. You're on the air. Oh, I'm sorry. We've got Ann on in San Francisco. Ann, go ahead.
Hi there. I really appreciate the fact that legislation is being introduced to address the demand side of the problem. But I do have questions about the supply side. One needs to look no further than the corner of 6th and Balboa in San Francisco to see an example of a thriving neighborhood on one side and urban blight on the other, where storefronts have been vacant for years and years and years. So I just wonder if there isn't more that could be done to take away some of the incentive that landlords might feel to keep storefronts vacant.
Yeah, again, we're going to the deep pocket waiting for landlords, but I'm going to go back to you, Joaquin Torres.
Yes, certainly. I mean, this is something, when we talk about incentives, those are an important core of how we address vacancies, but then also we do have to talk about enforcement. And one of the programs that Mayor Breed and Supervisor Feuer...
Excuse me, it's been singularly unsexessful, let's be blunt.
I mean, absolutely, there is a need for the tightening of it, and that's exactly what's being addressed.
They got about $5,000 in fines last year?
And that absolutely has to be addressed. I mean, like, it isn't doing enough to encourage landlords in a very direct way when it comes to fees or the time in which they have to get themselves on the registry or to lease up, or what is good faith or not. And what the complications may be with a particular site, those enforcement mechanisms need to be looked at and tightened, and that's what Supervisor Feuer and Mayor Breed are working on.
And we'll hear from Supervisor Feuer in the course of this hour, but let me indeed hear from another caller. And James, let's get you on now. James, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay, this time I'm talking and you're listening. All right. One of your panel mentioned earlier that retail is fluid and it's changing, and that's true. Of course, we're going from brick and mortar to online. Why can't the taboo of zoning be temporarily, partially changed? I mean, it doesn't have to be something major or across the board. It could be on a case-by-case basis. It could be once every, 2 years somebody reviews the city planner or the council, city council. So a landlord could petition for changing their property from zoned commercial to residential. And I know some of the properties aren't amenable to this, but I could see some loft space. It would also address the severe, last time I checked, shorting on housing.
Yeah, James, I'm glad you brought that up. In fact, it's been brought up on a number of occasions in this whole concern about all these vacant storefronts. Where does this fit in, Roland Lee?
Well, I think you're actually seeing this debate, especially around Union Square. There's some proposals to convert retail space, especially upper floor retail space, into office. But there's a lot of kind of debate over whether that's the best for the city. You know, if you're kind of converting this public space into private space, how does that affect the tax base? How does it affect the vibrancy on the streets? Then another debate actually on Polk Street was there's a Whole Foods that's wanted to open for a long time, but the city's actually pushing for housing above it. And the trade-off there, though, is that there's a lot more cost to that. So I think there is actually...
That's one business that doesn't have to worry about vacancy and foot traffic.
That's right. But there is, I think, an ongoing conversation, and I think this new legislation will also make more flexible zoning as well.
I'm looking at a tweet here from a listener who says, San Francisco small business owner of 15 years here. We renewed our 2,000-square-foot commercial lease in May with ease and good terms. The city itself is filthy and homelessness is appalling, but that's true in Berkeley and Oakland and San Jose, too. Well, again, if you'd like to weigh in here, we do indeed welcome your calls. And let's get a quick call on from Greg. Greg, you think this is a money grab?
Yeah, I actually do, and I'm confused by some of the comments. So when we most of the landlords have been landlords for generations, and then we also hear that they're worried about cash flow. Presumably, if you've been a landlord for generations, your costs are going to be lower, your mortgage is going to be paid off or at lower payment. So how is this not a money grab?
Well, we're back to that question. It's been looming over the conversation along with many queries here that we're going to continue to explore and many questions that need to be answered. As I said, we're also going to talk to Supervisor Feuer and get you on. If you're waiting on the line, we'll get to you when we return. Holds fast. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about the economy booming and asking the question, why all the empty storefronts out there in San Francisco? And the question can be asked about most cities, not only here in the Bay Area, but throughout the country. Here's Morgan, who tweets, let's take a page from Paris in preventing vacancies. Institute a vacancy tax and keep raising it until vacancies go down. And there's been this debate about greed and how much landlords are greedy and all this. And Andrew says, it upsets me to hear your guests blame crime and blight for this problem. I'm a small retailer, and even if rent increase is not this year's problem, that is the problem. It has already happened. Anyone who's holding on is dealing with what she calls the new retail landscape, but even that is a result of capitalization and consolidation of the real retail sector in general. Smaller players are not able to compete for resources. And we'll hear more from Julie Taylor on this, no doubt. But let's first hear from Supervisor Feuer, who joins us by phone here. And I should mention Sandra Lee Feuer, Supervisor of the City and County of San Francisco, representing District 1, which includes the Richmond District. And Supervisor, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello to you. Let me go to a couple of quick questions here, if I may.
Sure.
I'd like to, first of all, hear your response to Mayor Breed's plan, if you would.
So I think Mayor Breed's plan actually complements and is aligned with what my ordinance that I'm introducing around vacant storefronts. So I agree with what Mayor Breed has announced, that she and Supervisor Valley Brown are their new strategy. But actually, I think what my legislation does, it closes some loopholes. And what Mayor Breed's legislation does is that it actually helps small business owners to acquire empty storefronts, but I think also to streamline permitting and increase retail flexibility.
You want to impose higher fines, though, I believe. And if I'm incorrect in that, you can certainly feel free to correct me. But I'm just asking about the wisdom of that. There was an article, in fact, in the Business Times that said this just doesn't work. And there's obviously evidence to the contrary that comes to my mind from things I've read. But why the harsher fines, and what would they be?
Sure. So it's closing a couple of loopholes that are already in our building code. So I held, just to give you some background, in February of this year, I held a hearing on vacant storefronts. And the reason I held a hearing is because I received some statistics that in 2016, there were zero empty storefronts in my district. And I know that not to be true. In fact, I have 156 empty storefronts in my neighborhood. And so after the hearing and I shining a light on this issue, we saw that actually there are some loopholes. And one of the loopholes is that any store owner, what they can retail owns a retail storefront, all they have to do is put up a for lease or for rent sign, and then they do not have to register as a vacant storefront. In my own neighborhood, and which is not unusual in San Francisco, some of these signs have been up for 10 years. And so that is a loophole. What I'm proposing to do is to close that loophole so that people must that it's not enough just to put up a for rent sign, and that we are going to eliminate actually that in the building code. You can't just put up a for rent or for lease sign and then not have to pay an annual fee of $711 and actually keep your storefront vacant for a decade. And so that's simply not acceptable.
It's so also, it's also a problem, isn't it, that they're supposed to self-report these and then pay a
yes.
fee? And they don't pay the fee in many instances, right?
That's correct. And so we have some statistics that actually show that only about 30 businesses, stores of 40 right now, have actually paid the fee in San Francisco. So if you, in my district alone, as I said, I have 156 empty storefronts, but in the whole city of San Francisco, only 40 have paid the $711 fee. So there is an issue. One, we're going to make them register. They have to register themselves as an empty storefront, and we're going to require them to register. They must pay the fee right away. We were giving them 270 days to pay the fee. Now they must pay it within 30 days. And also, if they do not register their storefront, they must pay the registration fee of $711, but also pay a penalty fee four times the registration fee, which is $2,844. Another thing we're doing is requiring owners of these empty storefronts to have an annual inspection to ensure that their building is safe and is not a hazard and a nuisance. And so I think these things will tighten up actually the ability for the Department of Building Inspection to have an accurate count of how many vacant storefronts there actually are in San Francisco.
Well, you're going to need you're definitely going to need a reliable count of some sort. And Supervisor Feuer, I appreciate very much your being with us this morning. That's Supervisor Sandra Lee Feuer, who represents District 1, which includes the Richmond District. And right back to you, Joaquin Torres. You got to get an update of this data. And I think the Office, of Economic and Workforce Development is trying to do that in February.
Yeah. So just to echo what Supervisor Feuer said, just in terms of the complementary approach and a balanced approach to addressing the vacancy issue, you need to both have incentives and the real kind of research to understand what one caller mentioned, why is a certain vacancy an issue, or why is a corridor experiencing higher than normal vacancies when compared to other neighborhoods. As you mentioned at the beginning, the general consensus is around 3.2% vacancy. You normally view a healthy vacancy in a particular corridor at 5 to 10%. What we found by doing the deep dive work in those neighborhoods and understanding vacancies is that across 24 different neighborhoods, about over 6,000 small businesses that we've walked door to door to assess over on a quarterly basis, that we can deepen that assessment and have support from other departments to do that at a more citywide level.
Well, let me understand this. So you're only getting data based on reports that are made by citizens who feel that they should do
no, reporting? No. These are actually staff members that have walked the streets in our corridors.
Before that, the data was collected for the most part through self-reporting, wasn't it?
When it came to the enforcement program, terms of the registry itself, a combination of both. It was a complaint-driven system so that if a individual called in to the Department of Building Inspection or the city, then that vacancy would be registered. Department of Building Inspection would follow up, and then it would be applied to the registry. Communication would begin, and then the business owner had the clock ticking in terms of when they registered that business. We've been proactively providing our vacancy data to the Department of Building Inspection so that they can begin to follow up more strategically, so that Supervisor Feuer never again has to see something that a report that says that she has no vacancies when we know, based on our data alone, that there was around a 7.7% vacancy rate in the area of Geary that we were looking at.
Well, here's a question. I'm sorry. I just want to read a related comment because it ties in with what you just said about collecting data. And I want to go to you, Julie Taylor, on this. This is from a listener named Kenichi who says, where does the data come from on the issue of commercial vacancy? We just heard Joaquin Torres talk about that. But he goes on to say, how does your guest know that most landlords aren't holding out for exorbitant rent? Anecdotes?
Well, in the markets where I specialize, I know all those landlords and I know the asking rents. I know if they've received offers or not. I know what incentives they're willing to provide. So and I would suggest that in all the outer neighborhoods as well, if you find that local expert, and it may be also participants in the Merchants Association. They know the different owners, and they know the profile of those owners because it's part of a community. And usually the ones who are the greedy holdouts are well known to all, and those that are reasonable and involved participants in the community are also well known and respected.
Let me read a couple of comments here that are coming in. Kelly says, regardless of good policies that are being discussed, what we, the local buyers, buy online changes the retail store's on-shelf options, which then decreases the variety of items on their shelves, which then drives most people to buy online. And here's Green Apple Books tweeting to us, storefronts are empty because people don't support local businesses at a substantial level. Every time they buy something online, they vote against a vibrant neighborhood corridor. San Franciscans mean well, but they don't always put their money where their mouths are. Let me bring another caller on who has a story for us. Mark, that's you. Morning.
Hello, am I on?
You're on.
Okay, so this is a little quick story. Over in the Bush and Franklin area, we rented from with another little group of martial arts schools for over 10 years, and every year the rent would go up just a little bit. It'd be reasonable. And there were four other businesses up on that in that area. And then a real estate broker came in and upped the rent three times the level. And the architectural firm moved out. Another firm moved out. We moved into a space one quarter the size. And those areas are now over a year sitting empty. So, yeah, it's greed. But it's the real estate firm that came in and convinced the owners that they could get like these high-priced startups in there and build-outs that are just nonsense. And, you know, so we're out of luck. I'll take my thing off the air.
All right. We thank you for that narrative. And, Roland Lee, let's get your response to this. I mean, how much of this seems to be, again, I hesitate to use the word conspiracy, but, you know, something along those lines to try to get higher money?
I mean, I think just one important thing is that even if it is, the city has limited tools to actually control pricing. So commercial rent control is actually illegal because of state law. You know, the vacancy tax is one option, but I think that would be very divisive and definitely be a fight to pass something like that. So I think, you know, in this case, the city is looking at ways it can work with landlords and merchants and, you know, as opposed to trying to control the market, which is much more difficult.
Let me get your response to something else, Roland. Here's William who says, here in St. Helena, there is a huge number of vacant storefronts on Main Street. Why one of the wealthiest towns in the Bay Area can't support small business is disturbing to me. I think there are two factors, landlords asking ridiculous rents and old-time locals who don't want anything to change and won't accept new kinds of businesses in our town. How much does that play into this whole crisis?
Well, I think another aspect is, you know, the formula retail ban in some neighborhoods. So the idea is that you want to protect mom-and-pop stores, but you also restrict chains with 11 or more locations from coming in. And the mayor said that this is something she wants to look at because, you know, in some cases a chain store can actually survive economic challenges, whereas a mom-and-pop can't. But I think it is, you know, definitely, you know, another debate to be had, you know, whether or not this is the right fit for the neighborhood. You know, there was a recent survey in North Beach that they actually want a Whole Foods, but that's illegal unless you get a permit.
Well, here's a mom-and-pop listener. Will, join us. You're on the air.
Yes, I'm one of those quote-unquote greedy landlords that you guys keep talking about. So I really resent, you know, even Michael Post, you know, using the word avarice and greedy and money grab and holding out for the last dollar. I'm a mom-and-pop and son of a small property owner, a landlord here in the city for a long time. And if I really wanted to be green, even before recreational marijuana became legal, I get field calls from pod clubs who would offer me double what I would have. You know, so if I want to protect my children, I know I wouldn't go to my neighbors and community. So I just wanted to address that.
Yeah, your call is breaking up, but I appreciate the call and thank you for it. There's no attempt to stereotype here, I hope. If that's coming through, it's a mistake. There are all kinds of people who are landlords out there. And here's a tweet from Pamela who says, as a former director of a successful retail district in Oakland, soaring rents are the number one reason for vacancies. Without commercial rent control, many small businesses will not survive. Storefronts are left empty on purpose. What do you say to that, Julie Taylor?
I don't agree with it at all, you know, because you brought up something a few minutes ago that I thought was really important to touch upon. Consumer practices are changing, and when consumers are buying online, fewer options are going to be available to us in brick-and-mortar landscape. So, you know, if people really want to see all these storefronts filled, they need to be making more of their purchases within the four walls of the stores in their communities. And further, the cities need to relax their zoning, make their zoning more flexible so that we can fill these spaces with more restaurants and fitness and experience-driven retail, which is what the millennial customer wants. So what we're seeing is not just on the supply side, a constraint by landlords and pricing. It's really far much more on the demand side, where if retailers could do massive amounts of business, they would be chasing these spaces down and the rent would be irrelevant. But the reality is that retail sales within the four walls for many merchants have been falling, and there are absolutely new entrants to the market that are surviving, but it is a big shakeup.
You've also got a much bigger millennial population, and they tend to buy online to a greater extent. And
absolutely.
I'm wondering, Joaquin Torres, how much you see. Well, let me talk about some factors we haven't even mentioned here. There's a lot of construction going on in this city, which hurts pedestrian traffic, it seems to me, in terms of stores. You have a lot of I mentioned the millennials. I don't want to fall into any kind of stereotypical trap here, but they don't necessarily take to cultural events, which bring people, again, to pedestrian traffic the way that, let's say, the other generation does. And there's safety and there's cleanliness. I mean, in other words, we're talking about a whole array, it seems to me, a whole pastiche of things.
I would push back a little bit on that comment about millennials. We've seen an extraordinary millennial population, particularly in the Filipino community, that's come together for one of the first pushes for a continuation of a night market in Soma. And we've been able to see that night market be extraordinarily successful. So there are examples of the right kind of experiences that draw in crowds. It's a matter of what you're pushing. In the Bayview, I've seen extraordinary concerts go on there that support the local economy, local small business merchants. But
we need more of that, though. That's the argument I read in here, that we need more of that to draw the millennials more.
Oh, I think we do need to create more experiences here in San Francisco, whether you talk about the city supporting those efforts, like our efforts in Civic Center, whether you talk about night markets, whether you talk about outdoor concerts, whether you talk about small movie pop-up nights that are happening in our corridors, all of those experiences should be supported. At the same time, we want to make sure that those small businesses who want to have music during their art walk have the ability to do so. Going back to what Green Apple Books said, it's interesting. And just a note that I think is important for listeners to take away. 1% of your increase in spending has a $100 million impact in the San Francisco local economy. That's a reason to buy local and to support the uniqueness of the city and the makers that we have across San Francisco. In addition, 57 jobs are created for every $10 million that come to those areas. So please, when you hear those comments and you see those banners, I hope it helps you pay attention to support your small businesses. And also, when you walk into your dry cleaners and you find them serving coffee soon, please buy a cup.
And here are some more comments. Jeffrey says, I live across the street from a Trader Joe's and a CVS. My doorbell rings every day for people delivering toilet paper to my neighbors. John says, who needs stores? And Craig says, the greed of landlords here in the Bay Area, both for commercial and residential properties, is beyond the pale. Hashtag moral bankruptcy. Let me get some more callers on here. And Cheryl, you're next. Good morning.
Whoops. Hello?
I'm sorry, Jessica it is, yes?
Yeah, Jessica, hi.
Jessica, sorry, hi. How are you?
Hi. Good, good. I live in San Francisco. I'm driving across the bridge right now. And one of the things that I struggle with as somebody who would like to purchase locally is just that with long work hours and with commute culture, by the time I get home, like, things are just not, they're either not open or I'm making dinner. And so I think one of the things that, for me, I see as a challenge in the Bay Area is with the commute lifestyle that we have, there's not necessarily a lot of time, in the day to, and I also live, I work somewhere where it's industrial and I can't just pop out and run an errand. Otherwise, I would love to.
And I hope you're talking on a Bluetooth, are you? As opposed to holding a phone in your hand while you're driving? No, I'm sorry. That's my reflexive response. But I think you speak for a lot of people who simply can't find the time and can't find really the ability to do the kind of shopping they would probably like to be doing, Joaquin.
Well, yeah, I think that's a reality. Convenience is a reality for folks when it comes to consumer preference. I think all of us would agree. Even I think us around this room, in addition to us spending locally and buying locally, as I know we all do, that people look to convenience. That's why it's also important as part of the investments that we're making to support training to small businesses to help them understand how they can benefit from that e-commerce culture as well.
You're providing that training?
Absolutely, right. Yeah. So through free technical assistance that we are funding for small businesses, they can work with us to help create business plans that helps them understand how to do that work. That is one of the needs that was highlighted in the retail report that we commissioned.
I want to read another comment from Jordan who says, can you ask the panelists why landlords choose to keep their places vacant? If we understand their reasons, maybe the city can work with them and incentivize them rather than penalize them until they capitulate. Go to you in this, Julie Taylor.
Sure. Most landlords want to lease their spaces. A great number of the vacant spaces out there are antiquated in many regards. We have a lot of 100-plus-year-old buildings in San Francisco. I've encountered buildings with only 50 amps of power, bathrooms that are not handicap accessible and so forth. And the cost of construction today is a massive, massive burden for both the business person and the landlord because they're usually sharing the responsibility. It can be as much as $50,000 now to create a handicap bathroom You know, it is staggering. And so, you know, again, I look to what can the city do to relax things? Maybe part of it is relaxing some of the code requirements, because it's only when a tenant goes to pull a permit that code compliance is triggered throughout a building. You know, whether it's triggering seismic or electrical upgrades and so forth. And again, it becomes just too doggone expensive in many cases to make these repairs.
And let me remind listeners, Julie Taylor is a retail real estate broker and executive VP of Colliers International. And here's a comment from Jennifer. We've been hitting on, I think, a lot of important points here. And this is one that I think we need to hit on. Jennifer writes, the middle class in San Francisco, pretty much gone. The local mom-and-pop store has historically been owned by this middle-income group. To make matters worse, even if you have been able to make it as a small retailer and navigate the red tape, there's still an incredible challenge to find employees who don't have to commute all the way from Hayward because they can't afford to live in the city they work in. Certainly true, isn't it, Joaquin?
It is certainly true, and it is something that we need to constantly address, which is why the housing imperatives and initiatives the mayor is pursuing are so important for us, so that we can deal with those livability and the cost of living issues that we have in San Francisco. At the same time that we see stores closing in some areas, we also see them opening in areas that you wouldn't normally consider. In the Bayview, we have recent openings of Cafe Envy, of Tato, soon new fitness facilities. These are all anchor spaces that are creating vibrancy in the neighborhood. Grotto Wines. Their experience is to be found still in these areas, and business owners are making it work. They have the drive to want to open up and be successful, and we need to meet them with our creativity, with theirs, where they're at.
I want to get another response from you on a listener's comment here, if I can, Joaquin. Scott writes, I own a small business on Howard since 2005. The mayor needs to put down her broom and pick up power washer if she wants to make the city more pleasant for customers.
Absolutely. I mean, that's why those investments have been made in terms of our cleaning services across the city. In combination with both the police department and the Department of Homeless Services, so that you have a compassionate approach to issues on the street, in addition to the cleaning approach that you have on the street, both at a general level, at a micro level, and also with the support of some of our benefit districts as well. Who pony up their assessments to make sure they can complement services where the city can't always meet them. But the city is doubling down on those efforts.
And let me get a response, Roland, from you. Roland Lee, again, is a business reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. Denise writes, the city of San Francisco's solution to this commercial rent problem for small business is always pop-ups, crowdfunding, and multi-use, i.e. the Bookstore Cafe. The real solution is cooperatives, collectives, community ownership. The East Bay gets this. San Francisco's behind the times.
Well, I definitely think pop-up is another initiative, and the idea of, you know, maybe a retailer can survive for a few months and maybe transition into a longer lease as opposed to just leaving something empty. As far as communal ownership, I mean, I think just the cost of real estate is really high, and, you know, for the city to be trying to purchase property or partnering with other groups to purchase property, that's maybe just a lot more expensive and challenging. So,
well, the listener's right. There's a contrast when you look at the East Bay.
Yeah, there is definitely a price differential. Yeah.
Let me bring another caller aboard here, and let's go next to a caller in the city. Michael, join us. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Good morning.
Morning.
I'm the San Francisco native and a local business owner, and I have a question, actually, because I was looking at an article that Tim Wu had written in The New Yorker about some of these issues around urban blight and really thinking about some of the actual costs to neighboring business owners of vacant storefronts. And really thinking about how they do require investments in order to keep crime at bay, where studies show that even just one empty storefront on a block can significantly impact both pedestrian foot traffic and crime. And I'm wondering if it's worth making more of an effort to actually be charging landlords based on the net greater social costs, both in terms of city services to keep those spaces clean, but also for the sake of neighboring business owners and the net impact on business for all of us.
Now, thank you for that call. Let me get a response from you, Joaquin Torres, on that.
I mean, certainly, that's where the room for enforcement comes in terms of the strengthening of policy that Supervisor Feuer is leading together with the mayor. I mean, that is a way to address those issues. And certainly, the blight that we see needs to be studied in terms of why those vacancies exist. It's another component of the initiative in terms of investments to allow us to study not only individual buildings and quarters as a whole, but also understanding the intricacies, as was said earlier, about what is causing the resistance to these spaces and how do we fill them.
The caller is also talking about incentivizing, and that's a reality for people who are owning stores or in the retail business.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, and that's where those investments that I mentioned earlier come in. That when you have an issue like a bathroom that you do need to create access for folks, can the city come in and support? And we have. But also in terms of where those requirements currently exist in local code, are they necessary? We're finding in some instances they may not be. And in ways that also support the ongoing revenue and increase of revenue for a business, like someone who wants to sell very quick over-the-counter food, should you have to have a bathroom to pursue that idea? This new regulation says no.
Well, here, Julie Taylor, is a tweet from a listener. This is maybe an idea whose time has come, who writes, since the economy is booming, why not offer up some of the storefronts to local artists and programs providing community services related to the arts? That's uplifting culture and native communities.
Well, I can speak to that just very quickly. I mean, so right on Geneva and Mission, in the Excelsior, full disclosure, I live out there, is a long vacant space called Chuck's Market. Supervisor Safai helped change the code so we could allow an arts use in that space. A nonprofit, Youth Art Exchange, came in and popped up.
Well, we can find some agreement here. Julie, you like that idea?
I do like that idea, but it did, again, it depends on the physical space, whether or not it is appropriate, whether it will work, does it have finished electricity and plumbing and so forth. And it also depends on the profile of the landlord. You know, not all landlords are going to embrace that idea, you know, for whatever reasons.
So Roland Lee, is it viable, you think?
I think it really is location dependent, right? That's always the key. And I think that part of the strategy, the reason it is kind of multi-pronged, is that, you know, each area is different and has its own factors. But I think it is promising, though.
Well, we'll leave it there on the note of promise. And thank you all for being a part of this morning's opening hour of Forum. Appreciate you all being here. Roland Lee, again, is business reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. Joaquin Torres is director of the Office of Economic and Workforce Development for the City and County of San Francisco. And Julie Taylor is retail real estate broker and executive vice president of Colliers International, a global real estate services and investment management company. We also spoke with Supervisor Sandra Lee Feuer. Another hour of Forum is up ahead. Stay tuned for it. And thank you for being a part of this hour. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.